Welcome to First Turn, where we play board games for the first time and discuss our immediate reactions. It's like book club, but for board games. I'm Eric, and with me is Kiwi and BP.
Hello.
Hi.
Did you guys forget we were doing a podcast?
Well, I was thinking, because it's a pirate-themed game, I was thinking of doing it in a pirate voice, but...
Why didn't you?
I don't know. That's why I hesitated.
Do it again.
Until we get a pirate voice.
Yes.
Hello.
I'm not doing a pirate voice.
Can't move on.
Today we're going to be playing a game of Libertalia, designed by Paolo Mori of Ethnos, Pandemic, Fall of Rome, Vasco da Gama, Dogs of War, Rise of Augustus. And the artist is Ben Carr of Time Stories, Deception, Murder in Hong Kong, Stephanie Gantes of Codenames, Seasons, Claustrophobia, and more. It is published by Asmodee.
What else have they done? Because I feel like I've heard their name before.
Everything. They're the biggest.
Oh. Yeah, they're like the biggest publisher.
Although we haven't played a lot of their games.
I was going to say, I know like AEG, right? And then.
Yeah, they're definitely by far the highest grossing.
Oh, wow.
Publisher.
Yeah, purchased a lot of people stuff, like just other companies. They've purchased a lot of people. A lot of other people's things. I mean, they have like, yeah, there's a lot of, I'm just clicking through their, I'm not going to read them all off. Agricola is published by them.
Okay.
Feast for Odin. Pretty sure Caverna is probably published by them.
Yeah.
It's hard to click through their stuff because it's all full of like all the expansions and all that kind of thing. Mm. Blood Rage, Bloodborne. Yeah, it's a lot.
Captain Swallow has always dreamed of pocketing a large nest egg in order to retire on a remote island, but he never counted on stiff competition from Captain Stanley Ruckham, Dick Shivers, and others, greedy and cruel enemies who always manage to attack the same ships as him. If he wants to finally sink back and enjoy... If he wants to finally sink back and enjoy peaceful days in the sun, he must become the most cunning pirate. In Libertalia, you must thwart the plans of competitive pirates over the course of three rounds while using cards that show the same crew members as your piratical comrades in arms. Yes, not only do they attack the same ships, but they employ the same types of ravenous scum that you do. Can you take advantage of the powers of your characters at the right time? Will you be outdone by the pirate smarter than you? Jump into the water and prove your tactical skills. I'm just going to say, I don't think pirates should be jumping in the water. They're on a boat for a reason. The mechanics are hand management, set collection, simultaneous action selection, and variable phase order. Box art is, at the top, some pirate ships, or some ships, shooting at each other. And then some pirates holding up their booty at the bottom. And one guy aiming a gun with really, you know, poor...
Yeah, he's got his finger on the trigger, which is a big no-no. He's aiming it at a person, which is also a big no-no. Two of your basic rules of firearms just right out the window.
The one guy reminds me of like one of the guys from Pirates of the Caribbean, the new one.
100%. That's Barbarossa.
It's kind of a weird photorealistic style that's kind of odd.
But again, I feel like they're trying to do Disney Pirates of the Caribbean without... I mean, do they have those rights? Because those characters really do look like they're from that.
I mean, they also look like pirates.
Yeah, Jeffrey Rush is the guy who played Barbarossa. And that guy has some very similar features to Jeffrey Rush.
I don't think you can copyright Jeffrey Rush.
Do we know what pirates look like? Come on. Like, pirates can look like anything. Yeah,
I was going to clarify.
These look like Disney pirates.
They look like the common portrayal of pirates in media.
Yeah, like these are the mannequins that you see on the Pirates of the Caribbean.
Yes. Oh, my God. I was just going to totally bring up Pirates of the Caribbean because it's my favorite ride.
Yeah, we need to stop talking about Disney so much.
Yeah, well, Disney's going to shut us down.
Mm. That is my favorite ride, though.
Based on all of this, would you pick this box off of the shelf?
I am kind of, I mean, I do like pirate themed stuff. I mean, who doesn't like pirate themed stuff? I mean, but it just seems a little polished for pirates, but I'm down for it because I do like pirate stuff. So yeah, I probably would.
Yeah. I mean, I like pirates and I feel like we haven't played a good game that really captures pirating.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think you know, theme wise, we haven't really played anything that I can think of that has pirates.
I know it's claimed as one of the overdone genres, but I feel like we've played a few pirate adjacent games.
Like smugglers,
like space
and stuff?
Pirates.
What was that game that we played that it's a merchants and marauders.
Oh, merchant marauders. Okay. Yeah.
We played that?
You did.
I think Eric and I did.
I was going to say, I don't remember that.
Yeah.
I know they pop up in a lot of like card games, like Smash Up and things like that.
Okay.
But I wouldn't really, they're themed as pirates, but they're not really like, it's not a pirate game.
Sure.
Well, I don't think we played a good pirate game. However, that box art is not appealing to me.
Yeah, the box art isn't appealing. I might pick it up because like, does Libertalia like mean something in Latin?
Liberty.
Yeah, okay, that's what I figured.
I assume it's the same root.
I'd probably pick it up just to see, like, you know, what the hell does... You can't really know what the game is based on the name. So I would probably pick it up just to look at it.
So I'm gonna go back, because you talked about mechanics before we could last time. BP, what do we think this game is going to be like?
Based off of your description or off of the box?
All of it. What we know so far.
I feel like there's going to be character roles, so we're going to be given like things, crew, like set kinds of moves that we can do based on who we have. So I feel like role playing may come out, especially with Kiwi's fantastic pirate accent.
What do you think
we're
set collection
for
is?
Stuff?
We're collecting treasure. We're going to collect crew. Collecting boats.
I'm very curious about the simultaneous action selection. Maybe that's crew.
Maybe like you have your crew. Do you think there's boats in this, or do you think it's all like cards?
Oh, I hope there's boats. I mean, how can you have a pirate game, a good pirate game without boats?
I feel like you're going to be moving your boat around a map, and then you have cards that like your crew, and then you do stuff and collect pirate booty, which you get in sets, because everybody knows one gold chalice isn't worth anything, but four? That's worth
everybody knows
points.
You go with the wooden chalice anyway.
Okay, so... I had to look up Libertalia, which, by the way, because Liber itself, so the very root is actually book. And so I was like, where is this? I think you have to do the full Liberi. So like Liberia, right? Free. So you have to go like the full noun to get to your free, not just Liber, just a little thing.
Books are freedom. Is that the Latin of it?
I would totally agree with that. There's obviously some sort of relation for books, Liber. I don't know. I would go for it in some philosophical realm. But let's not get philosophical. We're talking about Pirates game. I feel like pirates are almost the antecedent to philosophical.
I don't know. What else do you do on a boat all day? You philosophize?
Probably. I mean, those sailors were probably very knowledgeable, especially when you think about having to trace the stars and understand mathematics. Anyway, we are getting derailed really quickly. And piracy and pirate history is so absolutely fantastic. Like, I really do at some point really want to just create a pirate class. Like, so in my early world history class, we talk about pirates in the Ming Dynasty all the time. It's really interesting because, like, one person's pirate is just another's kind of merchant, you know what I mean? Like with the loose sense on legitimate or not. We obviously, and the box art goes to the whole like kind of Atlantic system and Atlantic piracy. But I mean, piracy is almost as old as really human existence. One of my colleagues actually did her dissertation on piracy in the Mediterranean and Portuguese pirates, which if you think about the 15th century as they were starting the age of exploration, totally makes sense. But I think from a Western perspective, when we think of pirates, we do think of that 17th century at the height of the Atlantic system, at the height of, right, the Eastern Hemisphere and Western Hemisphere being linked. And again, it's kind of a free-for-all game of, you know, these are either legitimate privateers, as the British call them. And I feel like that was just like a loose thing for we're kind of advocating for piracy. And then you also have like the idea that pretty much most American colonists, British American colonists, were probably pirates because basically they smuggled. They did not want to pay taxes. And so they figured out ways to ship goods in between the colonies without paying taxes and without shipping them on legitimate boats. And I mean, you could then make little roads towards the American Revolution. So piracy and pirates are, I feel like, just such a fundamental part of like human economic history.
If you go back to ancient times, like, was it really common then, or was it waited till like the age of sail and like cannons and long range weapons?
Nope. There's definitely, think about like Phoenicians. Some people think like the sea peoples who like disrupted ancient civilizations, like the Minoans and the Egyptians and some of the early Levant area growth. The sea peoples were basically just pirates marauding around. I mean, think about Vikings. I mean, they were basically just pirates going around and attacking and looting and taking.
I mean, according to the British, the father of the U.S. Navy was nothing but a pirate.
Yeah. And there's so many, obviously, there's just so many great, like, individualistic pirate stories. There's a couple stories of even pirate women. Like, yeah, pirates are fascinating.
Yeah. I took a whole class and whole semester of class on pirates. Myth and legend.
Yeah, and you had to focus that probably even just for one semester. I feel like, again, like, I mean, there's a lot.
Is that required by the Navy? You got to know about pirates?
No, but the professor had taught it. She was on a pirates episode on the History Channel. It was awesome.
That's pretty cool. Yeah.
I will let you know that this was one of the things that intrigued me about Kiwi, because he brought that up the night that we met. And I was like,
the only reason why she married me is because I took a class on pirates.
There you go.
It's reasonable.
So hopefully this game lives up to this.
All right. How do you actually play it?
Yeah. All right. Well,
are there going to be ships? That's the first question.
There is a ship. All right. We are taking role as crew members of a pirate ship nearing retirement.
Oh, we're not the captain.
We are not the captain. During three campaigns consisting of six turns each, that'll compose the game. We will try to amass riches by looting ships. The richest player at the end of the game is the winner. So the youngest player is going to shuffle their character cards and draw nine. They will announce the name and number of that card, so all players have the same numbered cards. So there's 30 cards in the deck. They're numbered 1 to 30. Not every number is present in the deck. In cases there are multiple cards with the same number, in the lower left, they will have an influence number, so you'll have a second number. The higher rank of the influence will make that mean. So if you have, so the example in the rule book is there are parrots and they're both ones, but one parrot has more influence than the other parrot. So the one with the more influence, maybe one talks and the other doesn't, I guess.
Or he talks to the right people.
That's how you garner the most influence, right? So characters are going to have four icons indicating when their special abilities activate. So if it's a sun, it activates during the day. If it's an orange setting sun, it's the dusk. If it's a moon, it's the nighttime. And then it's an anchor for either, which goes at the end of the campaign, which is on the seventh day, which is they call the day of rest.
What's that little rhyme you always say about a setting sun?
Red sky at night, sailor's delight.
There you go.
Yeah. It's supposed to have something to do with red skies at night. Being red means that the air is sufficient to not have storms and stuff. So your day is going to be good. I don't think that's scientifically accurate, but they also believed in mermaids. So I'm not sure. So the game is going to be played over three campaigns. Each campaign consists of six turns, and those turns consist of four phases. And the campaign will end with a scoring phase and then preparations for the next campaign. So phase one is Sunrise. So in Sunrise, each of the players are going to secretly choose one of the characters in their hand. They're going to put it on the table. Then once everybody has chosen their card, they're going to be revealed. And the youngest player will then arrange them numerically in order on the ship. Phase two is day. So in increasing order, so lowest to highest, we're going to activate any characters that have a day ability. Phase three, dusk. This time we're going to go in decreasing order. You're going to remove your character from the board and take gold, jewels, stuff, money. And you're going to take it from the slot your character ends up in. And then finally is the phase four, which is knight. And you're going to activate characters that have a knight ability that are in your den. So we all have a pirate den, which I guess is kind of cool. So we do this six times. After the sixth turn, we do a scoring phase. And this is on the day of rest. So players add the doubloons in their den to their loot. Chests are worth 5 doubloons. Jewels are worth 3. Regular goods are 1. Treasure maps, if you have a set of 3 of them, are worth 12. And then you also have cursed relics, which subtract 3 from your score. And then we set up for the next campaign. So all the characters in your graveyard are going to go into your discard. All the loot and doubloon is going to get returned to the bank. Players will get a new starting income of 10 doubloons. So we're essentially going to reset every time. We'll reset. Your score will stay the same. So your score will keep going up, but you'll reset and you get more points. And then players should still have 3 cards from the previous campaign. The youngest player is going to draw 6 cards, provide those names and numbers. So we could each end up with 3 different end cards, but we're always going to start with the same starting cards, if that makes sense. After the third campaign, the player with the highest total is the winner.
This is going to be fun. Let's play.
Nope, pirate voice.
Let's play. I don't know how to do a pirate voice.
R in front of it. Arr, let's play.
Let's play.
Hey, we be playing the game, mateys.
We just finished a game of Libertalia. To recap, I had 89 points, BP had 96 points, and Kiwi was the kingmaker with 64 points. So BP won. What was your winning strategy?
Oh, well.
Person who claimed the whole game that you had no idea what was happening.
Until the last one, and then I was like, I'm going to totally lose it because I actually strategized that round. Yeah. No, the first round, no strategy, except that for some reason I was lucky enough to get to always claim booty first, I feel like. And so I went for treasure maps because I feel like I heard in the rules, I listened to rules and I heard 3 treasure maps. Right.
Did you or do you just like treasure maps?
No. Because I remember hearing that and thinking, ooh, Eric likes treasure. No, Eric likes maps. And so I was like, okay. I got to get the treasure maps so Eric doesn't get them.
It's valid.
I was about to say, no, it's BP who loves treasure.
Yeah,
I like maps. Treasure. Eric likes maps. And maps, so yes. I heard like the thing that there was a special thing with treasure maps. And so I was like, I got to keep Eric from getting treasure maps.
There was a special thing.
Yeah. And then by the end, it was just like I had figured out like when I wanted to get the booty or when I didn't want to get to the booty. And yeah.
First round, I didn't understand the whole booty thing at all. So I was just going with, we had a bunch of cards that gave you doubloons based on other cards. So I just read those and did that. So I got off to a strong lead in the first round. I don't know what happened the second round. I was terrible. I think because I think we didn't have those cards. And then I had to figure out the booty thing and I didn't do a good job of it. And then the third round, I did all right, but BP pulled ahead.
Well, because remember at the end of the first round too, like I feel like I had said, wait, there's more.
Yeah, you didn't even know there was more game.
So I hadn't even planned for ahead.
I don't think any of us planned ahead. Maybe Kiwi. I don't know. What'd you do, Kiwi?
I was just I looked at the cards in the hand and tried to play cards that complemented off each other. So like in the last round we had the Spanish spy, which lets you turn in Spanish officers. But then I had to pick out 2 cards where it was like, I am okay with killing these people.
Yeah, I actually thought you were killing people so you could get that fewest people in your den card.
Because that was one of the options. I did play that guy, but then I took him I killed him instead of using that ability because I was like, I could go either way. If I have it, I'll use it to my advantage. If not, then...
There's a lot of cards that play off of each other, which is interesting. Yeah, and then the reason I said Kiwi was Kingmaker is because he didn't take the last map, which gave BP a map set because he wasn't paying attention.
Oh, and I guess that did win BP the game.
Mm-hmm.
You also gave her the governor's daughter, even though I managed to kill her.
Yeah, you managed to kill her.
But it wasn't intentional kingmaking. It was just standard.
Yeah, I couldn't use a map, so I didn't take a map.
I love how you guys are like, not that BP had the like winning strategy. It's just that
You did really well that second round. I was like, oh crap, she just covered 31 points against me.
Well, she did 31 points in both rounds.
I just established that
in the first two rounds.
You know, there's always an asterisk on everyone else's wins.
Yeah, everybody gets an asterisk. I mean,
it's three player games. It tends to happen.
But statistically speaking, it is less for me to win.
Yes, statistically speaking, we do have stats to back
you
it up.
You played a very good game. You covered a lot of ground when she figured out how the game worked.
Wait, did I?
I was way ahead that first round, and you did 31 the both second rounds. So you points wise, you won two of the three rounds. So
yeah, BP, you nearly beat me on just two rounds because you had 62 points after the second round. I have 64 at the end of the game.
Yeah.
So I knew what I was doing.
Theme.
I like this new bit where you guys try to guess what the game is about after I've already read the rules.
Because we were not close.
Yeah, nope. You were nowhere close. I feel like this game, you could probably put any theme into it, but I felt like the theme played in well to the types of cards that were there or at how they put the different abilities for the cards. I felt like the card abilities went well with the themed character that they put it in. So like the cabin boy, you just don't take any loot because, you know, the cabin boy is not going to get anything. So I thought that was kind of cool, but that was really the only place where the theme came into it. And I guess the booty, but you could have called it anything and put it in any theme.
You could have, but I do feel the game had a cutthroat nature to it.
Yes. Which I'm going to go with Eric on this.
Captured. Like it didn't, you're not like going around, you don't feel like you're going around like pirating thing, but just in a general, like, did you feel like pirates out to get each other and competing? Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is I liked the theme and I liked the way everything worked together. You could have put another theme to it, but this worked well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, the only thing I can think of is like Game of Thrones or something like that. But I feel like, I don't know.
It came off pretty cutthroat. I felt like,
yeah,
you know, just in picking loot, you're trying to screw people over.
And the booty and the treasure maps. Like, I don't know. Like, I feel like it was actually strategically planned out for this type of.
I think the mechanics and the theme work together. I mean, yes. Again, anything can be rethemed if you're being creative, but
yes,
you know, I think they tied together. Art, BP.
The whole setup is pretty cool. Your player den, if you will. Like, I thought that was pretty unique. The way that each of them was differently set. And then you had the action card kind of reminders on each of those, which I thought was really nice. Although I never used them because it was just difficult for me. But I feel like in that, it brings some art to a relatively otherwise kind of artless, you know, cutthroat game. Like, it tried to bring in some of those elements. So there's a lot on each of the individual cards. I never got around to really reading the text on the lower bit. But I like that they tried to bring in a little bit more just in case, like, I don't know, if like you were bored or something, there was something extra. But I never got bored enough in the game to like spend enough time to read too much on the cards. I mean, it's not like super high quality. It looks like most of the stuff's probably just cardboard elements, but I think the art brings a little bit flair to what may just otherwise be a flairless game, if that makes sense.
Kiwi?
No, I agree with what BP said. I think the flavor text is difficult to read, but it's not really that important since it's flavor text.
Mm-hmm.
I think the script is a little hard to read, but the rest of the card.
I think from a design perspective, it's better to have your flavor text in a more handwritten font.
Yeah,
that way you differentiate that this is not important rule information.
Yeah,
I'm okay with that.
Yeah, and then that's why I'm like, it doesn't matter that I never read it because I was so involved in the game.
Yeah, my only thing in the art, I like the art style and stuff, and I mean the people are people, but I think it fits kind of more kind of serious tone of the game. I do wish that the player mats had something to differentiate, like give your pirates more character. So like maybe different pirate flags or something. Something kind of, or like, I was thinking at first, I thought like a cool different boat, but I boats all look the same, I guess. But
you're right. I think different player flags would be cooler. I mean, there's always the coloration, but then like, I mean, does everyone has to be skull and crossbones?
Right. Like, I don't think it's necessary for gameplay. I just think it could have been, there were some minor things like that. Like, I like that they give you a pirate name and a pirate boat name, but I think they could have done more with the art to amplify that. But that's just kind of nitpicking. I think overall it's good.
Yeah.
It's nothing like outstanding, but it's cool. Gives you a pirate feel.
I do like that. So all the player boards are essentially the same. Like if you look at the left and the right, so the left, they all have the skull rock with the cemetery and the right has the ship. What's different is what's in the middle.
Right.
But what they did for the player colors is they created. So like for the white player board, it's fog. Yep. For Eric's yellow board, it's like a rising sun. For the red one, it's a setting sun. So like the color of the player board is built into the art.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I kind of just went
super creative.
Like it's a cool way to do it. I just wish that they had gone the extra step and made like
given
keep
the
that,
pirates
that's cool.
character in addition to their setting. Yeah.
So like the ships could be different. The islands themselves, like they already did half the island different. I don't understand why they. Well, I mean, I do understand why.
Yeah.
Just, they. We're saving on art by just copy and pasting.
And design and production and all. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
But no. Yeah. I mean, maybe that's one of the things you do for your Kickstarter, like bonus things or whatever, you know, or you do for an expansion.
What year was this game published?
2013. Cause it was a 2013 Spiel.
Oh, Spiel.
It wasn't a nominee. It was a select. So it was one of the games where they were like, yeah, it's not good enough to be selected or be a nominee, but like, we recommend you play this game.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think that in 2013, like that probably would have been enough, but I think in 2020, like that's where publishers are taking that extra step. And I think that's where, if you were to like reprint this, you'd probably want to go in and do those little touches like that. Mechanics, Kiwi.
I thought the mechanics worked well. I thought it was interesting when I read the rules and it was like, okay, one player is going to draw the 9 cards and then tell every other player.
That was awkward.
I was like, there's 30 cards in there. Like, why are we doing that? But then as we played along, you know, Eric was like, when I killed his Spanish, what was it? The governor's daughter, you know, I killed her. And then Eric was just like, BP still has the daughter. Like, you know, so you had to remember that, or the monkey was the big one.
We all got rid of our monkeys early.
Like BP and I played ours the round before, and then there was a bunch of cursed relics. And as soon as Eric got the cursed relic, BP's comment was, oh crap, he still has his monkey. Yeah.
So I thought the same thing when you read these rules. I'm like, you know, most games, hey, we want to have different cards, so it makes it more interesting. But the fact that we knew what we had was very important to the game.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because it made you change what you were going to play. So I thought like that was pretty cool. And it had a like a love letter type vibe to it with the numbers cards and playing cards with against each other with different abilities.
Which is interesting because there were only a couple of rounds where I think any of us played the same card as another.
We did the first thinking phase, about that, because I think we just picked the obvious. Well, this one seems good. But after that, we really switched up a lot.
Yeah, I think the first round it was a couple times. I think the second and third round, though, I felt like maybe once, maybe twice, we both played the same card. Mm-hmm. But I felt like the mechanics all came together and worked well, despite the weirdness that it seemed like.
Yeah, it definitely took us a little while of what? Why are we doing all these things? But it came together. Funny, because last episode we played
Blue Lagoon,
and it had kind of like a phase reset and we were iffy about it, but this one I think it worked much better.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yes. I think we all got very excited for the phase reset. Cause I mean, the first one I was like, wait a second, I've got to do that all again, just because I feel like I had strategized for one round.
Right.
And then like, it was like, oh, I got to play a long game, you know? And, but I think once you decided you were playing the long game, then. So I feel like the first impressions and the types of players we are, What do you guys think about someone who might have analysis paralysis in this type of game?
I mean, I think any card games with a lot of text like this, a lot of choices is going to be.
Because I'm thinking Yokohama guy in this, like if he's playing long game, like, oh, my God.
Oh, yeah. But the thing is, you don't know what your next cards are going to be. So that'd be super risky, too.
Yeah, the only way you can guarantee. So during the first round, I was just playing cards because I thought that they were good and worked well with other cards that I had played. Mm-hmm. In the second round, I was definitely looking at abilities and thinking, okay, this ability doesn't work well with what I have, but maybe it'll work well with something we get in the future. So I'm going to try and keep this card
right
as we go into the future.
And like maybe instead, because we all like, oh, God, I have a ancient relic, evil relic thing. Play my monkey and get rid of it. But like if you'd kept the monkey, you could have been like, I'm going to on like spots with a bunch of relics, I'm going to purposely play my low cards and get those relics, knowing that I can monkey at the end and shift it all over to somebody. Mm-hmm. And then I kind of have a different strategy. There's a lot of strategy here that you can do.
Yes.
So, yeah, it might be tough for analysis paralysis people. But I mean, I think life is just tough for them. So, yeah. Rules, BP, any card issues, wording issues?
No, I don't think we had any questions going through. I mean, I should caveat and say I got a little frustrated in the beginning because I personally just was probably not keeping track of the days. And so I was really confused on the ship card, why there were like 8 different movements of the sun. And I think that was just me, like just being confused on how the turns and the phases went. Maybe I wasn't paying attention during the rules reading or whatever. But after the first round, like by the second round, I was like, oh, I got this. Like, I want my freed slave or whatever. Like, I want like an evening person in my den if like they capitalize on that. Like, I started to get it. But the first round, I was a little confused by that.
It's a little tricky. Because it moves so fast, mm-hmm. like you don't necessarily need a token to mark what phase you're in. But I think some sort of element like that just to visually help us understand. Okay, play. So the first round we go, okay, we're in, you know, the daytime, we're in the dawn, we're in the, you know, just to visually see it on the board rather than this, what they chose to do with the sun's increase. Like, I think a better graphic there that helped reinforce that rule of when the phases occur would have been helpful. Kiwi, rule book.
So the rule book, like the layout is good. I got a little confused with the PDF that I was reading because instead of being the pages separate, two of the pages were together. So I was like scrolling through and I was like, man, I'm missing a whole lot of stuff here. And I was, because I was only looking at half the page and the other half I couldn't see. So I had to like zoom out. That's not relevant, but it was annoying. I had to read this rule book a couple of times just because the way wording was difficult. There was a point where, you know, it kept saying like, oh, you know, the night powers come from the characters in your den. And I was like, how the hell do you get characters in your den? So then I was like looking at the cards. I was like, oh, there must be a card that says like, hey, you can put this guy in your den. There's not a single card that says like, put this card in your den. It was like, how the hell do you get cards in your den? Like, how are you supposed to use these damn abilities? Yeah. And then it's like a tiny sentence in Dusk where it's like, okay, you check your booty and then you move your character to the den. And that somehow in like 3 read-throughs, I had missed that sentence.
Yeah.
And I had no idea how you got characters into your den. And that's like the only place in the whole rule book where that's mentioned at all.
So I feel like though with a company as big as this, as you guys have said that it is, I don't like,
maybe it's an
older
game.
Do you have a team that goes through? It's true, it is an older game, because I feel like, you know, nowadays you would have a team that goes through this and cleans this up. Like, I know plenty of PhDs in history who have gone into technical writing where like, right, like that's what a technical writer should be doing, is going through things like that and catching these types of issues.
I mean, the one thing with Asmodee is like they are really big, but a lot of the games that they like that get published underneath Asmodee aren't necessarily like Asmodee themselves. It's like one of the 30 publishing companies that Asmodee owns.
If you are incorporating a game under your name, don't you want to make sure it meets your quality standards? And but again, I think we're just going to go with this is an older game. And I agree. If it were going to be republished in 2020, I feel like, especially as much as the three of us know about gaming and how gaming has changed in even just the last like 3 years, let alone like the last 8 years, there would be a higher demand for some changes to be made. And there would be a higher like demand as far as like people would pay to have those like little things taken care of.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I was also going to bring up, Eric brought it up that in the Ex Libris episode with the rule book, and that game is from Renegade, and we were like, oh, and my comment was like, I thought the book was good. I think Renegade does a good job with the rule books. And then Eric's comment was like, no, this rule book is super confusing.
Yeah. I mean, so I think it's weak.
Even with like, good companies, like you can still have a weak rule book.
I think it's very important because like, I still think rules are the biggest barrier to entry for board games.
Yes.
And the fact that we struggle with something and we play quite a few, I mean, we know we're not the most active gamers, but we play quite a bit of games. And if we're confused, it's not a good sign for the general public.
And I think we've brought that up even with, AEG, another one of our favorite publishers, where like Ecos, like when, I mean, we sat through, right, with the, wasn't that the designer who was teaching us to play?
I think he was one of the developers.
Just one of the developers. Okay.
Yeah.
But then, then when we sat down, like we still had to Google stuff. And I just feel like if you're sitting at that moment where you have to Google stuff, like, but yep. That just means, again, we just have to remember these are all made by humans. Humans make mistakes and nothing is really a perfect product. Do we have that type of demand?
I mean, I do. I want a perfect rule book. I have to read them.
Player interaction. Shit tons of it. Like I said, it's
right?
Cutthroat. There's one. What card do I play? What card do I think they're going to play? What card do I think they'll play down the line? Did they play these cards? What do they have in their hand still? Then there's what booty do I pick? Do I let her have the map? How many maps does she have?
I love how you bring that one up specifically.
Obviously at first we're like, oh, that Spanish officer is terrible, but you could use the Spanish officer to your advantage too.
Yeah, which you guys did quite well. I just avoided all of that, but you guys did that quite
Kiwi
well,
did, I feel like. Killing these people off.
Just in the third round, because I read the Spanish officer, and so I wanted to do that. I think Eric was better with the swords, and then he had the guy that got him extra doubloons for having sabers.
So, yeah, but at the early game, we're like, that just is a bad thing. But turns out maybe it's not. So, there's just, and then what order are they going to be played in? It's just a ton to think about. And it all relates to what the other players are doing.
I think we were all very interested in what everybody was doing. It was down to the final count on who was going to win. And I think especially that third round, we were very strategic in watching each other. So most definitely high player interaction.
Yeah.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
Would you play it again, Kiwi?
Yes, I would. I was thinking about whether or not it could be something that could be used as a type of gateway game.
Mm.
And I feel like this probably isn't a good gateway game.
Yeah.
Just because I feel like there's a lot going on in terms of like strategy. Plus, if you've never played it before, I think we talked about it with what cards do I want to keep going into the future?
Yeah.
And if you've never seen the rest of the cards, we saw all but 9 cards in the deck. So we got to see 21 cards and 2/3 of what was in there.
I love all that math real fast.
We saw most of the cards. So if we played again, we would know most of the cards.
Yeah. So you would know more like, okay, I know this card gets played really well with this character. So I want to keep this card in hopes that that character comes up.
So you feel like those who would play it more often, introducing new players, those who played it would have an advantage.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plus with all the abilities, like you might be able to explain like, okay, here's what's going to happen. I feel like if I was going to play a game like this, where it's character on character with values, I would probably start with Love Letter because so small, but then I feel like you could graduate from Love Letter to this.
I think this has an advantage over games where people draw separately, because at least I know as the teacher, I would know what cards you have in your hand. And I can explain them to you versus like, we have totally different cards and I can't teach you because Unless we're showing our, show me your hand.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So I think that does have something going for it. So I could see this as being a gateway game, but I'm not sure I would, if somebody was like, hey, you're into board games, like what game should we get to like learn how to board game? I don't think I would put this in the list of games that they should initially get.
No, but I think it'd be, if you think, oh, they really like player interaction, they like take that sort of stuff, then this would be a good one to get to. Yeah. BP, would you play it?
Yes, I would. And I agree with a lot of Kiwi's assessments. I think it's in maybe a little more intermediate, not beginner, not people who are just Catan style. But I'm already thinking of a player group that I have here locally that we, in fact, we played Love Letter the first time I played with them. And I feel like this would be a game that those who are into the game playing aspect and not those who just socialize in the play gaming group would really get into, because there is a lot of that high player interaction, the strategy, but the strategy is not too complex, but it's like, it's inviting and it's motivating, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, I'd play it again and early for maybe the first round. I was like, man, I don't know about this one. It was kind of frustrating. The phases were weird. Like it was different enough that it didn't click. And then I was like, ah, we're just playing these cards and I don't understand. But then once it did click, it got really good. And so,
yeah,
I think, you know, once you get the strategy, you really get into it.
I do have the fear, though, as you guys brought up, like, what if you start to like know the cards enough? I mean, I feel like with a group like the three of us, like even if you knew the cards and you knew what the waitress did versus right, the governor's daughter or whatever, like you would still be able to play and have it be exciting. But would people get dulled with that?
I feel like if you're playing with the same group, yes, because on top of knowing the cards, you also know the person you're playing against. I think when you change up opponents, you're going to change the game again, because part of that game is figuring out what that other person is going to do.
Okay.
I think at three players, it's got limited replayability. And the problem is if you change players, then one person might know more. But if you had six players in this thing,
could get chaotic.
There's a lot of chaos.
I would like to play this with six people.
I know. You love like that chaotic.
It's like a Cult Express. It's going to be pure madness.
Yeah, especially if some of those cards, it's like you murder the highest ranking like character on the board.
Yeah.
You put a couple of those on the board and then it's just like, I don't know who's going to choose what.
So I think if you had six people and even if you played with those same six people a handful of times, it would still stay interesting just because it's too many people to like really get a read on. So I think it'd be fun.
All right, get us a game of six people then. But if you have any pirate recommendation games that we have overlooked, or I mean, yes, if anyone does want to like sit down and play a six player version of Libertalia with us, please let us know on firstturntabletop@gmail.com or Twitter and Instagram @firstturncast.
We got our Gen Con badges today, so.
Yeah, yep. And we've got our Gen Con badges, so we will be there 2020. So, I mean, let us know in advance if you're planning, and I'm hoping they would probably have this in the library. Otherwise, I'm going to go with a podcasting camel. Arr. Yeah? Did I get it yet?
Are you being a camel?
I don't know. A pirate camel. A pirate camel.
But you just said R with a pirate voice. What? There wasn't much camel in there.
Oh, it's a dying camel. It's a dying pirate camel.
Oh my god, I don't even know I can do this anymore. So don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe to your favorite podcatchers. Arr!
And then backwards. So I'm going to go ahead and take the good
map.
BP.
Takes the map. King making.
Are you going to go for the cursed?
No, I'm going to murder my barkeep.
Okay. I mean, I did. I did call them out, like treasure map. Like,
yeah, you get treasure map.
I think if you play back, I said it calmly. Treasure map.
So yeah, treasure map, jewels, or
treasure